With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Dan, Arsenal fan, if that means anything right now. You can get me on Twitter at @_jersey_fits.
Hi, everybody. My name's Thomas. I'm the editor of wolvesblog.com, a fan site unsurprisingly dedicated to Wolverhampton Wanderers. You can get us at Twitter at wolvesblog.
Hi, I'm Jake. You can get me on Twitter at @JakeJackman2Ns, and I am a Newcastle fan.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining me, guys, in the middle of a global pandemic, not to continue to harp on it, but here we go. The Premier League is finally back in limited training. They did the first round of coronavirus testing, COVID-19 testing. Just six of the 748 players and staff to be tested returned positive results. Considering that percentage, are you guys any more or less confident that we will get to see the conclusion of the 2019-20 season?
I was pretty confident that they would at least attempt it. This just kind of reassures that. We'll see if I have a different answer for whether they start back up or get to completion. Because I think they'll get to completion, but you know, the percent chance in my head is much lower, like probably more like 60 or 70, where I'm like 5% chance they're at least going to give it a shot and start back up. So I guess this makes me more confident, but I was already reasonably confident that they'll start.
Yeah, I think I'd probably concur with that. I think we're using Bundesliga as a kind of a guinea pig, you know, a few weeks ahead of us. I think I'm right in saying they had more tests at the equivalent stage. I think they had something like 10. Obviously, they've gone on to restart. And I think the financial implications and the pressure on the Premier League is that much greater that, you know, they will definitely want to start. But as pointed out, you know, getting to the finish line will be a week by week process. And, you know, but what we're looking for, I suppose, that would derail it is a serious blow up, isn't it? It's a spread of infection rather than people reporting back with it. But, you know, you would hope that the plan that they've got is about containment, and you'd hope that they'd, once everyone gets used to it, they would see it through.
Yeah, I think it's gonna make it more likely that they're gonna start up pretty much on timescale. I'd say they're talking about mid to late June, and I think that's pretty realistic at the moment. Not many positive tests, which I think is good. I think there's another round of testing today that two more players tested positive, and I think they were both from Bournemouth. So I think it's they'll probably keep running a few more each time, but as long as they've got the protocols in place and they can isolate, and hopefully over time you'll see fewer and fewer positive tests returned. I'm not quite sure if the Bundesliga might turn any more between match days. That might be interesting to see if they did that and if they managed to keep it a sterile environment. But yeah, that would be the big challenge for the Premier League teams, is just making sure that players continue to follow the protocols, both in training and when they're away from training. I'm sure we'll come on to a certain Tottenham player in a short while who was found to flout those rules. But I think it's a positive start. And like Dan says, I think they will start up again, and that they will have a good go at getting to completion. But, you know, still so many unknowns, both in of football and the world on a wider scale, that it's difficult to be totally confident they'll manage to get the season finished. But yeah, it's a good positive step, and we've not had many of those recently. So I guess it's something to pin your hopes on.
For this to work, they just need to test like every couple days. That needs to happen. Otherwise, we could get a big spread, and that would end everything. So I'm assuming they had that capacity because I can't imagine having a restart plan without it. But, you know, that's just something that needs to happen.
Yeah, and we're not going to delve into the social aspect of should all of the tests be going to Premier League clubs just so that football can come back. But you mentioned the Bundesliga there, Jake. As far as I know, and we did just start a Bundesliga podcast at Bundesliga Pod. as far as I know, there were no reported positives in between the first match week and the second, which just concluded as we record here on Sunday. So hopefully that would be the case in the Premier League as well, although obviously you can't count on no one getting it ever, but I think the hope would be that not that based on all the policies that are in place, based on like the socially distant celebrations, the fact that the benches are all 6 feet apart, even though they're training together, there are small things that are a little bit weird, but as long as the processes work, which they seem to have been doing thus far in the Bundesliga, weird though some of them may look or seem, I think there is a level of confidence that once it starts, it would continue to go. But there is always that threat that if, you know, a whole squad gets it, you know, you can't let them play somebody else and all of that would have to come. But I do agree with all of you guys. I think it's very likely that it restarts sometime soon. If it's that June 12th, that'll be interesting. So the 8th is apparently when when La Liga is meant to restart. We'll see if it's in and around that time, but yeah, I definitely think that the sense is that the Premier League will be back this season, which is a thing that I'm sure many of you listening at home are very excited about indeed. So going from something very lighthearted like a global pandemic, we'll move into talking about accounting rules and how they were potentially broken by Manchester City. The Court of Arbitration for Sport will be hearing Manchester City's appeal starting on June 8th. Sounds like it'll just be a 3 or 4 day affair for that to run its course, which means even if the Premier League hit the June 12th date, which has been bandied about, but I don't think has been officially announced in any meaningful way, it means that at least the hearing would be over and potentially the decision would be made before the return of Premier League football. And I was curious to hear your guys' thoughts on what that could mean for City for the rest of the season if we do get restarted, and what it could mean for that whole pack chasing the European spaces, since fifth could be a Champions League space and sixth all the way potentially down to eighth or ninth, depending on how the cup stuff ends up working out for European spots could go.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be a huge impact if the ban is upheld, because I'm assuming everyone is kind of operating under that reality that it will be upheld, just because, you know, why not? If you can go for fifth and it might be a Champions League place, as long as you're not making any, you know, financial decisions based on that, there's no reason not to. If I think it'll be a bigger deal if it's overturned and those spots are not Champions League place, but it is only 1 through 4 and 5 through 7. If that happens, it probably spells the end for Arsenal and Tottenham at Champions League. I think it's already unlikely for them, but that would just really put it another step out of reach. And it would be a big deal for Manchester United and Chelsea, because obviously if City is eliminated from the Champions League, then both of them can get in. But if not, then only one, and that's obviously a massive deal for both clubs. So I think if the ban is upheld, it's not going to be a big an impact, because we've kind of been assuming that's been the case for a while. But if it's overturned, it'll be a huge, huge change for all the clubs, probably 4 through 9.
Yeah, I mean, I'll state a prediction first. I think it will be overturned. I think it will
entirely?
Be reduced. Yeah, well, not entirely. They'll get something, probably a fine, probably a really significant fine. I don't know. I don't want to talk about conspiracy theories, but I just feel like that's a club where they can probably make things happen. And I don't know, you know, I don't want to go into that shady kind of area, but put it this way, I'll be surprised if it's upheld to the full, but I'd be less surprised if it was just reduced to a fine and a warning about something like that. That's my prediction. That's what I've thought all along, and I maintain that. And that's not just because I'm a Wolves fan and I'm pessimistic about, you know, what might happen, you know, the knock on to us. But that said, I mean, if they are successful with their appeal and they're back in the Champions League, then it's business as usual. I think, as Dan pointed out, if it's upheld and they're not in it next year, I think it's a massive shot in the arm to all the teams who kind of would expect to be in the mix for Champions League football. So that's obviously Chelsea and Man United. Man United at fifth, obviously, at the moment. And, you know, even Spurs and Arsenal we'll probably look at it then and think, actually, if we have a good surge towards the end of the season, you know, we'll make it. Personally, I kind of feel that Man United have got their act together, and with the players they'll have back and where they were going just before things shut down, I still would back, you know, Man United probably to finish fifth or fourth, and then Chelsea to be the other one. So it'll probably be one of those clubs that ends up getting affected. But yeah, I mean, for Sheffield United and Wolves, who are obviously massively flattered to be in the conversation, neither of those teams will have expected it. And the Europa League would be a massive achievement for both of those teams. Wolves to do it 2 years in a row, and Sheffield United to make it for the first time, that would still be massive. But obviously, yeah, I mean, the carrot of potentially making that huge leap is incredible this late in the season still to be there. So it would be disappointing. But, you know, I think all the teams, you know, are realistic about it. So, but yeah, my prediction, as I say, I actually do think it will be overturned.
Yeah, I'm with Thomas. I think it's going to be overturned. What is happening in football on a wide scale now and in the world is probably the biggest and best distraction for Manchester City and FIFA, just to sweep this one, UEFA, sorry, to sweep this one under the rug and just pass this in a very nondescript way, because it's not going to be the big story in football for very long at all, a matter of hours even. It's just not that important anymore, so it's so much easier to overturn it. Not that I guess the media scrutiny is really going to influence the cast, but I think that it's probably a factor that they know that it'll be easier to overturn this and do it with little outcry. So I think it probably will be overturned. But if it isn't, it will. If knowing the outcome of this, and knowing that the ban wouldn't be overturned for clubs chasing Champions League football, knowing that FIFA would be enough, is obviously going to have a huge carrot approach, huge carrot effect even, because if the season had played out before, they wouldn't have known the outcome. They would have still been focused on fourth, but knowing that before playing all those games is obviously going to have an impact. But I'd still say, even if it wasn't overturned, I still think that Tottenham still got an outside chance of getting into the top four. It's, I think what's going to be more important than the CAS outcome is going to be how each of those teams deal with the difference in atmosphere and environment. I think that teams like Sheffield United and Leicester might not be so effective without fans in the ground, especially Sheffield United. And whereas I don't think it would affect Arsenal and Tottenham as much. And Wolves, I think, are a team that are pretty good away from home. So I guess that's a good indication of how they'll fare with the new environment. But yeah, I think it's going to be overturned. And I think that it's going to be fourth place for Champions League. And I'd say all those clubs have still got a chance, albeit Arsenal and Tottenham's chance will be severely hampered if Manchester City are still allowed to go to the Champions League.
Yeah, all really good points. I think I'm going to just double down on what I said literally on the show with Dave the day after the decision came out, which is I think it'll be 1 year and a big fine. I don't think they can backtrack the entire way. I know it isn't CAS that made the ruling, but I don't think they'll backtrack the entire way. I'm thinking it'll be 1 year and a fine. Could be wrong. Time will obviously tell. Yeah, I was surprised how pessimistic you were there, Thomas, with Wolves lurking right there currently in sixth, just 2 points back of Manchester United. I do agree with a lot of what you were saying there, Jake, about the teams that could benefit or be, you know, hampered by the fact that there aren't going to be fans. I think what's really interesting is in the Bundesliga show, we were just talking about the fact that on average, 44%+ of home teams win. And since the pandemic, obviously just 2 match weeks at time of recording, but only 16% of home teams are winning, which, you know, obviously very early days to be talking about the statistical significance of that. But at an early look, it seems like the absence of home fans is definitely impacting matches as opposed to how before it was impacting things in a positive way. So if you just look down the table to see who has the most home matches left, you'd imagine they would be a little bit disadvantaged by the fact that there won't be fans for any potential resumption of the season through its conclusion, if that does happen. I will say for Tottenham, the worst case would have been points per game and just calling it a day. We actually would have dropped all the way to ninth. If they had nulled and voided it, we would have been in third from last season and still had a Champions League spot, or fourth. Did we finish fourth last season? Who knows? And, if it had been, if we're playing to the conclusion of the season, all of a sudden we have Kane, Son, and Bergwijn back, all of whom would have missed until the end of the season, likely in the previous format. So if the season picks up, it'd actually kind of favor us. We just picked up 1 point of the last nine with the loss to Chelsea. I think we lost to Southampton. No, it was Wolves. Sorry, Thomas. I'm sure you were very aware that I was wrong on that. And then the draw with Burnley. But if we had picked up just eight of those rather than one, we would have been level with Chelsea. If we had picked up all nine, we would have actually leapfrogged Chelsea into that fourth spot. So I don't think we're out of it. Obviously, being, you know, 7 points back with nine matches left is not a good place to be, but especially if it's fifth and we just have to get up to United and we're only 4 points behind there, then I think we have a real chance. But the restart of the season is probably the best thing that could have happened to us, because we were faltering pretty heavily and had a lot of injuries. So I don't know why I'm turning this into a thing about Tottenham, but probably not surprising to a lot of the listeners at home. But yeah, I think it'll be a big thing. I don't disagree, Dan, that they were probably already playing as though that was going to be a Champions League place, but I feel like there's a difference between thinking you know and actually knowing that just getting up to that fifth spot would be enough for those Champions League places. And then, Thomas, you could fight for that Champions League space, even if you miss it, then both Wolves and Sheffield United and the Europa League would be awesome. Obviously, Arsenal would have a chance to sneak back into that conversation as well. So I'm kind of hoping that City do end up getting that ban. Sorry, City fans. But, you know, based on the evidence that's been leaked to the public, it certainly seems like they were guilty of it. And also what it could mean cascading down the table for which teams would be in contention for which things, I think would just bring a lot of intrigue for what would be the remainder of a largely fanless season. All right, now we will move on to something that happened in the latest Premier League shareholders meeting. They unanimously agreed to allow clubs and players to sign contract extensions through the end of the playing season rather than what was previously the end date, which was June 30th. But they have to actually sign the extension. So there are rumors that, for example, Jan Vertonghen, who already has interest in pre-contract negotiations elsewhere, might sign one of those rather than signing his extension at the club. And I'm just curious for you guys, are there any players at your club that are kind of in this extension limbo at the moment?
I don't believe so with extensions. We have loans expiring and we have Saliba coming back from loan, but I don't believe we have anyone who is an extension guy who will lose based on whether they want to sign an extension.
The loan thing is really interesting, though. I would assume that doesn't happen, but I don't know.
I don't know, because I think Saliba's back. Like, I know for loans, they tend to go to a certain date. I don't know if football will find some way to extend them because that's not the spirit of it, or if they'll go to the letter of the law where you were loaned till this day. If the team wants that loan to end, then it'll end. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. That'll be interesting. We have a couple guys on loan they don't play major minutes, but Ceballos could be playing major minutes. Yeah. So that's meaningful. That is probably the more interesting part for Arsenal as opposed to extensions. And as far as I know, we don't have a solution to that. So I guess keep an eye on that. We'll find out.
Yeah, nothing really major happening at Wolves. Our reserve goalkeeper, John Ruddy, has already been extended. Wolves had an option on another year, so they just called in that option to roll that over until defer the problem until next season, which is good for us because we've been linked with Loris Karius. And I would rather swerve that bullet. So John Ruddy for me for another year. makes a lot of sense. But other than that, I think all our players are tied down to contracts. So it's all neat and tidy in the West Midlands.
It is not neat and tidy at Newcastle. I'm looking now. We've got four loans that are going to expire and six players out of contract. So, yeah, it's not looking great. That's 10 players gone. But the lone ones are probably the bigger ones for us, because you'd have Lazaro, Bentaleb and Rose all leaving. And they're probably three starters, or at least three players that would play on most match days. Bentaleb off the bench, maybe, but you know, they'd all play significant minutes over the rest of the season. Willem's not so much. He's injured. I think he's injured till later this year. So that's not too big of an issue. You've also got Mankio, Andy Carroll and Matty Longstaff all out of contract at the end of the year. I think Carroll's got a clause that he can extend it if he plays so many minutes, but at this point I don't think he's 5 minutes, so that's, he might squeeze those minutes in June and get a new contract, but I'm not sure where that one's going. We've also got Rob Elliott and Carl Darlow out of contract. That's our two sub keepers, so you know, we could go on with just Dubravka, but I'm not sure we have any other keeper, so that could be a risk. Yeah, it's not looking great. I'm sure some of those would probably agree to a new contract. I think the difficulty of Newcastle, though, you don't know who's going to own the club when the Premier League restarts. So I'm not sure there's a great lot of work being done on keeping these players at the club. Like Matty Longstaff should be one that obviously we'd want. And I think that they've tried to keep him in the past, but I don't think it was a deal that's been signed. I think he's spoken to clubs in Europe, so I'm not sure where that is at. It might be one that gets sorted if a takeover goes through, but that is yet to happen. So yeah, it's confusing. I'm not sure if anybody who works for Newcastle at this point could even give a new contract, even if they wanted to. So yeah, we've got a lot of players going out, but we've not really got a lot to play for. So I'm sure we'll muddle through whatever happens. But yeah, I'd imagine at least one of the keepers and Mankio getting a temporary extension, but yeah, I can't see any of the rest of them getting it. And hopefully we can keep the loan players at the club, which I'm sure loans would probably be more straightforward to keep at a club than players expiring.
Yeah, I will say, I cannot even imagine what the dressing room would be like if Danny Rose randomly showed back up again post delay due to coronavirus. And it was just like, hey, it's me, that guy that leaked all that stuff to the media, and I'm back now. So I would imagine that we would prefer him to stay at Newcastle. In terms of Tottenham, it's just Vertonghen and Michel Vorm in the senior squad. Vorm, it sounds like, might transition into a coaching role either with us or not with us. Vertonghen is the big one. It kind of, if I had to guess right now, I'd say he's probably moving to a club in Italy and would not ever play another match for us again, which would be very sad for us to have missed his kind of final moments with the club. He's given us some great, great moments since, well, I want to say 2012, maybe? Man, yeah, he's been here for quite some time. His pace has gone this year, so it might be about time for him to take a step down, but obviously love him a whole lot as a player, and he'll be sorely missed if he does leave and miss the remainder of the season just because of this weird arbitrary thing. But if he does, you know, if he wanted a 2-year contract from us, we were only offering basically 1 year rolling. If he was able to get a 2-year contract somewhere else and he just wants to make sure that he's fit for whoever he goes to next, I don't think anybody would particularly begrudge him. It would just be a little sad and unfortunate for fans, but it's hard to you know, be mad about him for just trying to secure his future like that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, next up, I wanted to talk a little bit about the transfer window. So obviously, we're blazing right into when the summer transfer window would have happened. Best estimates, we're going to restart there in June, as we said, hopefully finish early August or by August, but the floating rumor is that the Premier League is meant to start either late August or early September, which is a very narrow, air quotes, summer window. So curious to hear from you guys what your thoughts are on the transfer window. There's been talk about potentially just having it open during the season. Is it just going to be that weird 3-week period? How do you think the transfer window should happen this, air quotes, summer?
I cannot imagine it'll be a 3-week period. That sounds like a horrible, horrible idea. So I both do not think that will be that way and really hope it's not. As far as what will actually happen, I have no clue because no one has any clue what's happening in anything right now. But I would think leaving it open for the first, you know, insert number here, month and a half, whatever, of the season is probably the easiest way to do. But obviously even that is a bit problematic, because having it go stretch that far into the season, you know, changes a lot. But at some point, there's no perfect way, so it's going to have to be picking whatever imperfect solution is the best. So, you know, without putting that much thought into it, that's probably my preferred solution. But again, I see there are a lot of flaws with that. So I have no idea what will happen. And as far as what should happen, I think that's a fine idea considering what we're working with, but happy to, you know, hear another solution.
I think they've just got to open it up all season. When you look at the financial implications this is going to have, not just on the Premier League, but the Football League, teams need to be able to generate income throughout the season. And, you know, and one of the ways to do that is to sell players. You know, if Wolves were in some kind of financial strife and, you know, they could attract a massive fee from someone for a key player, then they would want the ability to do that. And I think not having the window will probably make some of those deals a bit easier, because people aren't sort of getting muscled because they're worried about the window shutting, closing on them, not having the players. And, you know, I think it just makes sense, doesn't it? I can't see any other solution that's viable. It helps sort out contracts. And yeah, I think it's better. And I think the whole transfer window thing has been diminishing, like the people are spending their money in a wiser way. So I think the transfer window has actually served the purpose of making clubs more, you know, financially intelligent about the deals they do and don't do. So now might actually be a time to just say, you know, let's just get rid of it and then let's let teams sort it out throughout the season. It does add an element of interest throughout the season. So I'd be up for just bringing it back and keeping it that way.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to try and find a way to keep it as it is, to be honest. From what I've read from people that know a lot more, it seems to be the way to go. And I think, I don't think it would be realistic to keep it open all season long. I think that you'd get, I think players have too much power for that now, and it does have a big impact on squads. I've seen it at Newcastle before. As soon as a transfer window closes, players do seem to play a little bit better, and there's no players going on strike. We've had that a lot in Newcastle, players going on strike to force three moves. I think probably the most famous one was Kabay, went on strike, didn't get a move to Arsenal, and then came back into the team, did pretty well after 6 months before moving on. So I think having the window open might cause a few more players to go on strike, and I'm not sure if I'd quite like to see that. I agree with Thomas. If they're going to get rid of the window, this is the perfect opportunity to do it. I think that probably the most logical thing, if you're going to try and squeeze next season so close to the current one, is to maybe leave the window open until till the end of the January window, or whenever that was meant to be, and then keep it open till then, and then close it, and then you obviously there'll be not as much disruption during the running of the season. But it's impossible to predict what's going to happen, so it's very impossible to get data out there for the transfer window. I'd assume that a lot of work on players, especially out of contract, has probably been going in over the last few weeks anyway, I'm assuming. The agents there know which clubs are interested, and those deals be quite quick to do. I'm not sure if there's going to be a lot of big money moves this summer anyway, so maybe you could get away with a 4 or 5 week window. But yeah, it would be carnage, as Dan said. I'm not sure I like the idea of it staying open all the time, but I think till January would be fine. But yeah, it's an impossible one. But you've got to get a window in there somehow, or change the window completely and have it open for a longer period, because there's going to be a lot to do. There's going to be a lot of players out of contract. There's going to be a lot of teams changing squads. There's going to be a lot of teams changing the wages they can give to players. That might mean it's going to be a lot of movement, especially, you know, in the free agents alone. So you're going to have to need time to do that. So it's going to be difficult. I think what they're going to go for is probably like a 5-week window, and maybe leave it open for the first couple of weeks of the season. But yeah, I think maybe going to the end of January might be the better solution, that sort of keeps the window intact but also gives clubs time to get their squad sorted and time to bring in revenue, especially clubs lower down the footballing pyramid. That might be the best solution for and the most fair solution.
Sky Sports in absolute shambles at us discussing the idea of no formal deadline day. I agree with you with a lot of the points you guys just made. It just seems impossible to try to confine it in between the two seasons if the window is going to be that tight. And by that, I mean the window between the two seasons, not the air quotes transfer window. Also, how are teams going to make it all the way out to like Australia or whatever to do their preseason? But maybe that's an issue that definitely won't happen for another day. Also, potentially should have mentioned this earlier while we were in kind of the midst of all the serious COVID talk. But in terms of players returning, they've been allowed to, obviously, small training. I think it's 5 per small group, so that even if a small group gets it, it wouldn't expand to the whole rest of the squad. Some players already not particularly fond of this. N'Golo Kanté apparently doesn't want to be involved because of health issues. I think I've already seen a picture of him in training, but it sounds like Lampard and Chelsea have backed him in his concern about returning this early. Troy Deeney, on the other hand, just very publicly said, "I'm not going back." And he had a really good quote after the meeting that they had with the Premier League, where they mentioned that playing in a match will be safer than going to the grocery store, to which Troy Deeney allegedly said, "I can choose whether or not to go to the grocery store." So I'm just curious to hear you guys' thoughts. In the last episode, we talked about whether or not the players were kind of being left out of the discourse, and now it seems like we've finally gotten to the return point, at least for training, and since the players haven't really had much of a voice here, they're having to make their voice heard by their presence or not. Just curious to hear you guys' thoughts on either how those two have handled it or player power in general in regards to the situation.
Considering the uncertainty in the situation, I kind of think that anything is fair. Like not wanting to go back, totally get that. As he said, I can choose to not grocery store, or as he allegedly said, he can choose not to go to the grocery store. If you don't think it's safe, fair. I mean, it's literally a pandemic. So if you want to go back and it's been deemed to be at least pretty safe, then fair enough. But if you don't want to go back because you don't believe it's safe, I get that too. Totally understand decisions, and any decision, as long as you don't go ridiculous freaking quarantine, any decision that has been okayed by the Premier League and the governing bodies, I think is fine and totally valid.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm on the same page as Dan there. I think you've got to give people the right to opt out. What that means in terms of their contract, I don't know, whether there'd be any implications, whether they should even be expected to there should be any kind of penalty or wages not paid. I don't know. I suppose that would need to be worked out. Might possibly cause a grey area if sport's going ahead and it's deemed safe level to do so, and then they choose to opt out. You know, what does that mean? But it'd be interesting. I think it should definitely be a choice that each individual can make on its own merits. And I think Troy Deeney, someone I'm not massive fan of as an individual, but I do respect what he said and how he put across his argument, and the concerns he raised at the meeting of the players that he didn't feel were adequately addressed. So he has the right to pull out, as does Kanté, as does anyone else. So it'd be just interesting to see as things ramp up whether a significant number of other players pull out. The line that's normally trotted out is players want to play. So I probably expect, particularly with them watching what's going on in Germany, that the vast majority will be out there when this thing restarts.
Yeah, I think I agree with Dan and Thomas as well. I think that if any player doesn't want to play, they should have the right to opt out and I wouldn't like to hear or read about any players not being paid or any further action being taken against them. I think that'll make me a bit uncomfortable. But I think there's a way to go about it, and maybe you should maybe discuss it with your club first and go through that instead of just announcing it to the world. Maybe Deeney did go through the club, but it seemed the way the Kante thing was managed was a lot better. Because at the end of the day, you are paid by the football club. So, you know, reporting to training in the first place, going through your tests, and then maybe getting it squared then might be better. Because although I agree that they should have the option to opt out, you know, there'll be a lot of the fans that are wanting football to come back, have their own jobs and are being made to go back to work, and they don't have that option to opt out because obviously the differing financial positions of the two people. But it can come across a little bit arrogant to sort of opt out of it like that. I think there's a way to go about it, but I think there should definitely be that option. But yeah, I think as Thomas says, I think I mentioned it the last time I was on the podcast. I listened to her, I think with Sean Dyche, she was talking about the return of football, and he was saying everybody at Burnley was looking forward to it, and he couldn't imagine any of the players there having a problem. Players just want to play football, and if you can provide an environment that is safe and passed by the government in the Premier League, then players would be all for that and would back it and want to play. So I'd imagine the vast majority would return and play if it was deemed safe to do so and there was protocols put in place. But yeah, I think there should be a way to opt out, but I think that you should also about that in a certain way as well, just to have respect for your employers, the league as a whole, and the other football players. I think it's just right to go about it in a certain way. That's the only thing I'd say on the Deeney thing.
Yeah, it definitely seems like a personal decision that's kind of being called by huge corporations. But as you say, Jake, that's happening to everyday people as well. So I'm curious to see what the league will look like day one if we fully return and some players are sitting out. And on a personal level, hard to question their personal motives. As far as the sporting aspect goes, if Watford go down because Troy Deeney doesn't come back or something like that were to happen, what's the fallout? It's just going to be a very tough situation on the whole. But this whole thing is a tough situation. So as we kind of talked about throughout the whole show, hard to say. We'll kind of see as everything transpires. We'll end with a little bit of a high note. The Bundesliga has returned. We've obviously started a show about it. Is this the third time I've plugged it? At Bundesliga Pod. But it's been really interesting to see live football back and all of the things that have come with it, at least from a viewing experience with no fans, being able to hear everything on the pitch. This week, some broadcasters chose to put in crowd noise, but you have social distancing on the bench. But if they go on the pitch, they're out there with 22 other players, some of which from different clubs in different areas. Just curious to get your guys' thoughts on the return of the Bundesliga, especially if you've been able to catch a few of the matches.
Yeah, I've watched both weeks so far, and it was less weird than I thought it would be. Like, I kind of get used to the no fans and everything after a couple minutes. I didn't get to watch the Leipzig-Mainz game, but apparently there was crowd noise, so I don't know how that went, but yeah, that's a decision. Yeah, if anyone has input, please let me know, but I didn't see it, but I know that's a thing that I guess they may do. But I didn't think it was that weird. It was nice to have football back. It was good. I would be totally fine if the Premier League came back with no fans. Like I said, I got into it pretty quickly. And yeah, football's football. It's fun to watch. It's more fun to watch with fans, but even without fans, I find it quite fun, quite enjoyable. So, you know, very happy to have it back.
Yeah, I haven't watched much of the Bundesliga. I've seen a couple of highlights, but I haven't been watching the matches. I think I'm storing up enough wife credit so that I can go full in on the Premier League, particularly if they start staggering the matches and showing them every day. I'm going to have plenty in the bank for that, so I haven't got on the Bundesliga bandwagon. But I would say the Wolves were actually the last Premier League team to play a game of football before this all wound down, I believe, in the Europa League. We went over to Olympiacos on the Thursday night, and then everything got shut down on the Friday, and we played a game behind closed doors in Greece. It's strange, but I wouldn't say it significantly diminished my enjoyment of watching that game. I didn't want Wolves to win any less. I did still have implications on how games pan out. My thought is that it's to the benefit of the better teams. Because I think if you have a flat environment, so a completely level playing field, undoubtedly, I think the best players benefit from that. I think there are certain players individually within that who feed off a crowd and tend to do better. I can think of some in the Wolves team. I think Jotto is a prime example. He really feeds off the energy of a home crowd and the disdain of an away crowd, and it pumps his game up to another level. So I can see players like that suffering in a flat atmosphere. But from a viewing perspective, I'd just be happy to have it back. I don't think it'd be interesting to see the crowd noise piped in and what kind of impact that has. I think it hopefully might be able to increase some intensity to the viewing experience, but I would probably just stick it on mute and then, just talk with someone or do something to just try and sort of forget about it. Because quite often I'll go to the pub and you're talking to someone while you're watching the match, and which I suppose you can't do this time. But I don't know. I'd just be happy to have it back, and it wouldn't really bother me if this season was played completely behind closed doors and some of next season. I enjoy the game and I enjoy watching it in whatever format is available.
Yeah, I've been watching a bit of it. Most of the games I've watched on mute anyway, so I wouldn't even be able to tell what was happening with crowd noises. I think I got bored of Steve McManaman about 10 minutes into the first game I watched, and that was me done. I didn't want the commentary, so I watched it without. So the crowd noise thing hasn't been effective, but I'd much rather the football come back with fans for the atmosphere and just the effect they have on matches. I think, and I also think it's a game for fans, so it's, it's better if they're there. But obviously, if you can't, I'd rather have football without fans than not have football at all. So I guess it's a trade-off you've got there. But yeah, I think a lot of the other things with the Bundesliga, such as the subs sitting 2 meters apart, is probably more marketing than it is for public, for the safety of the players. They need to be seen to be adhering to all the protocols that the public are also following. So I think it's probably more of a marketing thing than anything else. But it's not really that weird. They still warm up together. I think I've seen like 8 or 9 players behind a goal during a game. So yeah, they're still doing all of that. So it's not really detracted from my enjoyment at all. And I've also followed a lot of people in picking a German team, and they've won both games by a score of 7-0. So that's kind of improved my enjoyment. Although I have very little emotional attachment to any of those goals going in. It's just something, I guess, to break up the mundane life of lockdown. So that was quite cool. But I think more on what Thomas said, there will be players that suffer, but I also think there's going to be a lot of players that gain without having crowds there. I can think of somebody in the Newcastle team that is probably going to score a few goals if the football does come back, and that is Joe Ellington. I think that he looks like the type of player that just absolutely caves in when he's got the pressure on him, all the people in the stadium. I think he might benefit from it. I think I read a piece on The Athletic this week. They were talking about certain players being training ground players, and maybe they would benefit from the crowd not being there. Those that suffer anxiety, sort of being able to do it in front of a crowd. A few managers in the Football League were quoted as saying within the piece that their team selection would change if it was without fans, because certain players would benefit from that, which is just crazy. So it'd be interesting to see if the Premier League does come back, if certain players just suddenly become amazing overnight and then just disappear again when fans come back in. That would be an interesting thing to follow, but it's going to be different and it's going to impact some teams. But as I said before, some teams are going to suffer whatever happens now. Even if tomorrow you could have full stadiums, there'd be some teams complaining that this break affected them to get relegated or miss out on the top four. So, somebody's going to suffer. It's just the reality of the situation we're in. But yeah, be interesting to see it come back. But the lack of fans, at least for me watching on the television, wouldn't have much of an impact, but I'd much rather they were there. But yeah, it's not going to make me enjoy watching the games any less.
Yeah, I'm kind of, I have been celebrating some goals. I have been chosen a club in Bayer Leverkusen, up the mighty Leverkusen, as I'm sure they don't say. I agree that the Bundesliga being back is a very fun thing to watch, although I do get excited by the goals. And I think the idea that that could be Tottenham rather than an adopted team just makes me really excited. And I do hope that I get to see that again this season, even if there aren't fans in the stadiums. Obviously, that is very unfortunate. And it is weird without fans in the stadiums. But obviously, as a fan in the States, most of what I watch isn't going to be impacted by the fact that there aren't fans in the stadiums. Not to take that away, obviously, from the match going public, who I'm sure would have a much tougher time of it. But I'm used to watching it through my TV, and based on camera angles, there are times when you don't really even know if they're not there. Although sometimes when a ball is hit particularly hard, you can hear it echo off of all four sides of the stadium in the Bundesliga, which is a little surprising and sometimes might wake people up from their football naps, hypothetically speaking. But yeah, I personally can't wait for it to be back. Yes, some players will struggle, some players won't. Form will be affected. We talked about this on the Bundesliga show that everybody talks about how unfair it would be if the season just ended, but there's also a level of unfairness if it restarts, because like I mentioned with Tottenham, all of a sudden, if you're a team that's playing Tottenham and you thought you were going to get to play them without Kane, Son, or Bergwijn, and all of a sudden they have all three back, would you not have been in a better position before all that happened in the Bundesliga with Lewandowski, who wouldn't have been back yet, but is obviously scoring for Bayern Munich? So there really isn't an ideal, entirely fair solution, but I'm just hoping that we get the solution that leads to us getting to see the conclusion of the 1920 season rather than it just concluding, as has happened in a lot of other countries already. We do have a very, very little amount of time left, so we can talk about it if you want, Jake. You can lead in on this since you brought it up in the pre-show, but footballers' hairstyles, some of them we thought were bald, turns out it was just a choice. What do you make of all of this, and also Serge Aurier breaking quarantine for a third time just so that he knows he has a fresh haircut when he gets to show up to training for the first time in 2 months?
Yeah, I've been shocked by some of the hairstyles that have come out. I think Mane's is the one that's gaining a lot of traction on social media. I think the biggest surprise for me was Ashley Young, although not in the Premier League anymore. It was just weird to see him with hair, because I'm pretty sure I don't think I ever recall seeing him with hair before. Maybe he did have it once upon a time, but I really don't remember that. So that was just weird. He definitely seemed like he was bald by, not by choice, but apparently it was completely by choice, or he's had time to go and get a hair transplant. But yeah, it's just been weird, because I think the thing with watching football is like they're never really off season. Like even during the summer, you still get to see, there's still normally tournament football. There's photos that go on social media, interviews going on, so they're always sort of there, so they don't have that big period of time just to suddenly change their appearance. But this lockdown has given them the time to do that, and some of them has just been weird. I don't know what they've been doing, like what has Mane been doing in lockdown to suddenly just lose all his hair. I don't know, it's bizarre, but it's quite funny. And also on the Serge Aurier thing, you know, if you could pick a player most likely to break lockdown, it would probably be him. So yeah, it's not, I'm sure he's not really going to be punished purely because there's not really any other right back at Spurs to do his job. So yeah, he'll be fine. But it tallies with his character. So yeah, at least he's maintaining his image, lacking discipline, even though he can't get booked or give away silly penalties. So that's nice.
Rude, but also very fair.
None of that was wrong. I don't know if you've seen Aubameyang's hair, but it is similar to Mane's in the fact that I think they've always had less than ideal hairlines, but they kind of just kept it styled so you either didn't notice at all, or your focus was drawn to a different part of the hair. But now that they can't get it styled, it just you see the hairline for what it is, and both of them, rough. Sorry, guys. Rough. I feel you, but rough.
Yeah, I mean, if this was a Zoom call, I certainly wouldn't be making any comments on people's hair. You'd be able to see mine. But yeah, I think Mane and Aubameyang just need to let it go. I think they would look infinitely better if they were just grade one, as we call it in the UK. Sides and back, but yeah, it's interesting to see, you know, people go one way, don't they? They go all off or let it grow, and it's interesting to see, because someone like Ashley Young, for instance, he could just easily shave his head, you know, there's no stopping him maintaining the style he's already had. It's almost like he didn't want to miss out on the fun, so he just you know, let it grow. But I'm not one to pass too much judgment on people's hair choices, because I'm starting to look like Emmett Brown from Back to the Future. So I think I'll just leave it there.
What a reference. Yes, agreed. A lot of us not rocking our optimal hairstyles right now. It has been a little interesting to see. Also, if any of you can go out and find the picture of Conte with hair, it is one of the weirder things you might ever see in your life. But we will wrap things up on that lighter note. If you guys would like to tell folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, although that seems unlikely given the global pandemic, feel free to do so now.
Yeah, thanks for listening. I'm still Dan, and you can still get me on Twitter at @_jersey_fits.
Thanks for having me on, as always, guys. Not much happening in Wolfslog at the moment, unfortunately. I've been very lazy. But as and when the season kind of heats up, if your team's playing Wolves, you can log on to wolvesblog.com or get us on Twitter at Wolvesblog to get an insight from the Wolves perspective.
Yeah, thanks for listening. You can get me on Twitter at @jjackman2ends. I've not got much going on at the moment either, but I will be recording a championship show this week, even tomorrow or Tuesday, so that will be out soon, so give that a listen. It'll be, I think there's more updates from the championship as well, similar to the testing, so we'll probably discuss that.
Fantastic news to hear about the championship pod. Also, Thomas, I would hope that Wolves fans would also check out your site, not just people that will play them. But with the championship pod, that means this week we'll have a Premier League show, a championship show, and a Bundesliga show all coming out at EPL Roundtable, at Championship Pod, and at Bundesliga Pod, respectively. Be sure to check all of those out, especially as we start to hit this, what seems like a ramp-up period, but, you know, I won't speak for the championship guys. We'll talk about the EFL decision, I'm sure. But anyway, thanks so much for listening. You can find us at EPL Roundtable. You can find me personally at Kevroth. We're glad to have anybody listening that still is, as we're kind of in this weird sporting hiatus. But we hope all of you at home are staying safe, and we'll catch you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.